So today we are joined by Logan Broadbent. He came third at the first US Series race in Jacksonville, and he also took the win in the Spartan Cross event, which was on the Friday. Logan, how are you?
Yo, Jack, Luke, what's going on, guys? Glad to be here.
Good. Thanks a lot for joining us, and congrats on a successful weekend down in Jacksonville. How was it? How was the weekend? How was being racing again?
Man, it was how do I describe it? It was incredible. I mean, the fact that I'm in Cleveland, Ohio, training in like, you know, sub freezing temperatures for months, and then getting to go down to the Florida and race in, you know, more tolerable warm conditions, that was awesome. But more than anything, it was just like getting back to racing, right? Mm-hmm. Getting back to doing Spartan races again, you know, getting energized by seeing, you know, all your friends and your Spartan family that you haven't seen in over a year. It was pretty special. So I'm feeling good. I'm a little bit sore from the weekend, but I'm more energized than anything else.
Do you know what, Logan, as well? I watched the rerun of the men's and women's, what they did, the 23-minute sort of re-highlight, edited highlights on Instagram today, this morning. I watched it. And I actually, when you guys all got to the spear and it was all very close still, oh my God, the actual butterflies in my stomach. Like, I was nervous. Like, I was actually there racing with you guys. I was actually like, this is really weird. I'm like nervous for a race that I'm not even taking part of. And I think that was half because it has been like, especially for us here in the UK, it's been like a year and a half before we've even even thought about throwing a spear, let alone seeing a spear being thrown. You know, like, it's been, I mean, you guys were into it last year. So, you know, but what excitement, you know, and like you said earlier, it was just a sprint, unfortunately, not a beast or a super. So there wasn't a lot. It was over before it even started. But and it was what a quick course as well, man. What a quick course.
It's a long trip. It's a long trip for, you know, a 20 some minute race, you know. But I appreciate the sympathy nerves, because like, you feeling butterflies for us, I mean, you can imagine what it feels like when you're there. Right. And you just come off of the A-frame cargo. You do the hoist, you do the vertical cargo. And then you go straight into the spear throw, and you're already a little bit dizzy, you know, from all the flips. But man, I mean, and in a short race like that, if you miss that spear, you're in big trouble. I missed the spear last year, and that cost me.
I don't know, but you have to explain, Logan. So from the clips that we've seen, and from what I watched of Steve Hammond before when he was setting the race up, it seemed like a lot of running at the start. It seemed like a lot of bogs. It seemed like a lot of running. And then it seemed like there was like, I think it was 15 obstacles in like a space of a mile at the very end, or half a mile, whatever it was. Is that literally how it was? Is that how it felt?
100%. Right? Yeah, 100%. I mean, all right, the first two miles, right, and change are basically just cross country race, right? And a lot of mud, right? It was actually much wetter and much muddier than I expected it to be. And I had even scoped out the course, you know, on Friday and a little bit Saturday. But it got deep, it got muddy, it got wet. So, but it's just running, right? And then you got a couple walls to jump over, you know, a couple hay bales, nothing that's really going to set you back. So you got to be technical, you got to be efficient. I think the race really started probably a little over a mile and a half in, working on the bucket carry, because the bucket carry was, you know, close to a quarter mile, right, around a pond. And, you know, and I think that's where you started to see a little bit more, you know, people were starting to make moves, starting to put on gaps, you know, maybe catching up to somebody ahead of them. But as soon as you drop that bucket, it's basically obstacle after obstacle after obstacle, especially that last mile. You had to be super efficient through there.
I don't know about you, Logan, but I still feel like the bucket should be carried prone and not on the shoulder. It doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right to me.
Yeah, I mean, you always got to worry a little bit about like back injuries or people doing something wrong, especially it's actually when you transfer, right? When you're switching shoulders or something like that, it's easy to get tweaked. But yeah, I kept it on my right shoulder the entire way around. It was basically me and Mark Audet, just running together, right? Kind of working off of each other. You know, he's part of this, the obstacle racing collaborative, this group that we started. So he and I are basically teammates, and it was cool just being able to run with him,
but just keeping it on one shoulder, not transferring, not switching. If you get it stabilized and you feel comfortable, you know, that can save you from any injuries.
Do you train the bucket like that? Sorry, Luke, I was going to say, do you train the bucket like that, Logan? Yeah?
Yeah, I do. I do, but it's not something that you can train, you know, every single day, because you will do damage, right? It's something where you have to you got to build up the stabilizers, you got to do some back work, you got to make sure that everything's strong enough to survive, you know, that quarter mile or however long they end up making it, so that you don't get injured. But it's also something that if you did day in and day out on training, and especially if you just kept it on the same shoulder, you would injure yourself just in training alone, right, from overuse.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Logan, going into this race, obviously you raced here last year, you're familiar-ish with the course. I doubt it changes greatly. You know what it's going to kind of be like. What was the game plan from last year going into this year for yourself?
Something I talked to Rich Ryan about on Thursday. He and I were just kind of spitballing, hey, what's our strategy? You know, what's my strategy essentially going into this? He wasn't able to make it down to the race, but he's nursing some injuries and stuff. But basically, you know, I came up with a game plan that, hey, I've been doing a lot of track work. I've been doing a lot of hill work because I'm more of a mountain guy and I'm more of a long distance guy. I like to do marathons. I used to do triathlons, but the longer races tend to be my thing. And so Jacksonville wasn't really designed specifically for me. At least in my mind, it wasn't for me. So we had to say, okay, so what is it that will put me in contention, right, to do well? And basically the game plan was just, hey, let's just redline from the start. Let's go out hard. I haven't done a race where I've really blown up and just like hit a wall and just, you know, fell apart. So I wanted to test where that envelope is. And so, you know, I decided I'd go out hard, you know, with everybody, you know, in the front, try to hang on for as long as possible. And, if I hit the finish, you know, before blowing up, then I did my job, right? Then I did my job. And even if I had really kind of, you know, fallen off and, you know, lost my legs, I couldn't be too disappointed because for a race this short, you know, and one where I wasn't particularly favored. You know, if you looked at any of the brackets and people who are guessing who would end up on the podium, I don't think I was on a whole lot of lists. You know, given the type of race that it was. But the only chance is if I just went all out from the beginning. You know, and then really started racing even harder. You know, once we dropped the bucket. And the back half, you know, I do Ninja Warrior. I did American Ninja Warrior. This will be my sixth year on the show. So I'm pretty obstacle efficient. So that back half, I can actually make up quite a bit of time on the obstacles.
Which you did, I point out.
Yeah. Yep.
So in the race, talking about it, so we said like the first half was a bit more of a running kind of race, and then it moved more towards the obstacle side. Where did you make your move? Was it after the bucket? Was it more towards those obstacles?
It was. Yeah. So, you know, running with Mark, you know, he was actually, you know, probably 10 meters ahead of me for a lot of that race. He actually led a lot of the start. He was out in front of everybody. But he and I were going through the mud together. And so it helps to have somebody just ahead of you, you know, stepping and like figuring out the line, you know, and so whenever I saw him drop a little bit low, I knew where to, you know, overstride and pop over some of those spots. So I probably saved a little bit of energy going through there. But then once we hit the bucket, you know, I kind of made a move there. There was water, you know, there was an area where we had to cross the water, started making, you know, a bigger gap there. But really, as soon as I nailed the spear, I knew that it was going to get very obstacle intensive right there. And that's where I was really going to make up a lot of space. And that's where it happened, right? You know, probably going into the spear, maybe I was in fifth place or so. Then I started picking some people off. By the time we got to the tire, and I'm sure we're going to talk about the tire because everybody's been talking about the tire flip, right? That, you know, I actually made a good decision, and that's what put me on the podium.
Yeah, this talk about that tire then, because it seems to be getting everybody, the bane of everybody's existence was the tire. What is it? Is the gym's been shut? Have they not, no one's been doing deadlifts?
What is going on? How long have you had that tire in Spartan races? I mean, seriously, like, you've had that tire for years.
Yes. I mean, it's nothing, it shouldn't surprise anybody, right? Except for the fact that the tire hasn't been at Jacksonville the past couple of Jacksonville races. Okay. Like, other than that, you know that several times this year, you're going to have to flip a 400-pound tire. So you better get ready for it. Yeah. You know, in this case, you know, it was a little bit different in that I think, you know, one thing that people didn't expect was the condensation, right, the dew. Mm. You know, that was on these tires, you know, that early in the morning in a very humid environment, but also in the morning before it was getting direct sunlight. I think it's really the dispersion of the water on the tire that made it more difficult because it was very small droplets and it was all over the tire. So when you went to go for that single tread and you went to go, you know, usually I do a pinch, you know, kind of the pinch grip, lift, get my toes underneath it, and then I go for the full hands.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get it off the ground. I was just slipping way too much. And I didn't waste a whole lot of time there. I think others had the same exact issue. Mm-hmm. Right. Some people got it flipped once, and I think it's a bigger issue if you get it flipped once and you can't flip it back, because then you feel like you have the sunk cost, like you're already so committed to getting this tire flip. Yeah. And why would you go do burpees if all you have to do is flip it one more time? But that's where, you know, you can really get stubborn and lose a lot of time in a lot of places. So I touched it, you know, I tried a couple different techniques real quick, but I didn't spend more than 10, 15 seconds on the tire before I saw Woodsy doing some burpees, and I was like, all right, I'm going to go bust these out real quick. I'm pretty fast at burpees. So yeah, I'm sure. So that helps.
The tire is very interesting because the rules around the tire have kind of changed and over the course of years. I believe we're currently at, you must flip it and let it land on the ground.
Yes.
And then flip it back, because we used to have people pulling it down with the fingers, keeping them underneath.
Yeah.
Keeping it
on their toes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which was allowed, but it made the second flip a whole lot easier. I think now we're seeing people doing that first flip, but they're losing a lot of energy. When the second flip comes, some people are burning out. A lot of effort, I guess, for quite heavy tire from flush, especially if it's wet, like you're saying, it was quite hard wet. So the rules over the time have also made that obstacle, while you know it's there, it's slightly harder, I guess, now because of the double flush flip.
Having said that, the smallest guy in the field flipped that tire twice and won the race.
Right. Good point.
Well, Leon.
Leon. Second smallest guy.
Leon and I are about the same height too. So I hung out with Leon quite a bit this weekend.
The smallest guy.
unless you see me in person, you probably don't realize I'm only, you know, 5'5". But
really?
So I think the camera adds a few more inches, a few more pounds. So hopefully that's a good thing. And what's interesting is VJ actually brought a towel with him and like either wiped it down, right, and was able to dry it out, which is fine. Which, you know, it doesn't say in the rules that you can't do that. Now, you can't throw the towel on the ground and then do the lift and then pick it back up and keep running. You have to keep it on you. But everything was legit, you know, and he planned ahead and it worked to his advantage.
What's really interesting, Logan, is he was running that whole race. I'm thinking, why is VJ for a 20-minute race got a hydration belt on? I couldn't work it out. And then as soon as he got to that time, he got his little towel out. You're like, okay.
Rich Diaz all over it. Rich Diaz.
But also, is it a new thing that you're allowed to make a hole under the tire with your heel of your shoe? Like a lot of people now are kicking to make the hole to get the fingers under.
Oh yeah. So if you dig a bit of a trench there around the tire, and then you slide the tire onto that trench, so the gap is beneath the tread, then you can get your hands underneath and pop it up. It's a great it's a great strategy, especially in Florida, where it's a very sandy kind of dry dirt, where it's really easy to move that sand, or you know that. You're able to move the land underneath it and slide it on. So I thought it was brilliant. I think it was a great idea. I may have tried it if I, yeah. I saw
well,
first.
Kempson did it, and like you said, he got the first one over, but then he was screwed because then he was, like you say, he was invested in not flipping it again or taking burpees. Yeah. Like, he didn't want to take burpees, then he lost a minute, and then it was like, oh, fuck, Shake, if I'd just done burpees from the start, you never know. You know, I might have been in beating Logan.
Might have taken my place. Right. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's tough. I mean, bag with a spade.
Yeah, just take it away.
Yeah, exactly. I'm gonna start running with like a backhoe or something, and just bust that out when I need it.
That would be quite funny. £10 right now. By the next US National Series race, there are rules written in the tire that you cannot carry a towel and you cannot use your heel to dig along the floor. I bet that becomes a rule.
That's a good bet, but you know, the other side of that bet is that every single person is carrying a towel during their race.
Oh, with that's going to happen. Yeah.
Right. That's probably more likely. Yeah, I'm guessing that's going to be the case. So
I was really disappointed when I came to Tahoe 2 years ago. Because like Luke had been the year before, and he said to me, that freaking tire. When we got to Tahoe, it was on concrete and I flipped it first time. I was so disappointed. I was like, what's going on here? This is really easy. I was a little bit disappointed it wasn't so heavy.
Yeah. If it's sitting in the mud or if it's sitting in, like, you know, some soft dirt or something, it's a little bit different. But, man, concrete, he's a cake, especially if it's dry. If it's dry,
all right, I got it up all right.
Yeah. Away from me. I mean, I weigh 128 pounds or something. But as long as it's dry and it's on concrete, it's never an issue. I have had trouble when it's been in the mud. Just getting underneath it, for sure.
I need to do it in water. That would be the game changer. Just put it in like an inch deep water.
Well, yes. In the tire.
Yeah, make it heavy. In the tire. Make it really heavy, yeah.
Don't
give the center any ideas. That guy. It'll probably fill it in.
Yeah, I mean, Woodsy had the same idea as me, right? He kind of just touched the tire and was like, okay, burpees it is, you know? And he didn't waste any time making that decision. And so
I don't think I've ever seen Woodsy do a tire flip, ever. In the whole 80 years he's been racing, I'm never sure I've seen him do a tighter flip.
Oh, poor Woodsy.
It's been a while. But, you know, Woodsy, you know, he's got to worry about his back and other things. You know, he's a smart guy, though, man. He knows what he's doing.
This is it. But
still finished
let's
second.
Talk about, let's talk about the field, because it was a pretty stellar field. A lot of people made it there. Obviously, this year with the US National Series, you've got the opportunity to do three races out of five. So some people may go to them. Some people may not go to a few races. But what was the thoughts on the start line, Logan, when you saw like a lot of people there?
Well, you know, first, the fact that we talked about butterflies earlier, right? If you haven't raced in a year, trust me. You're going to feel those butterflies, you know, more than usual, especially at a U.S. National Series event. Mm-hmm. You know that you've been putting in work, and you know you've been doing track work, you've been hitting the gym, you've been doing tempo, long miles, whatever it takes, but you just really never know exactly where you are, right, in that first race. So I would recommend anybody who's about to go do their first OCR that they haven't done in a while or Spartan race, you know, get out there for a local trail race or find something else where you can get those butterflies out and really get your feet underneath you before going to that big race. Don't let that be your first time competing if you know, if it's really important to you really want to do well. I felt that and just the fact that the field was as stacked as it was, right, is another thing. You know, the couple big names that weren't there were, like, you know, obviously the Canadian guys, Atkins, you know, didn't make it, which was disappointing, but I'm sure he'll make it toward the back half of the year, right, when things open up a little bit more. I was actually starting in the very front square, right? Because they kind of called in like the pro team or the athletes early. I started in the far right square, and then Woodsy was like, "Hey, do you mind if I start in that square?" And I was like, "Go ahead, Ryan." And then I backed up a little bit, so you know, which is great because then I got a draft, you know, for a little bit off the start. Being with all those guys. You know, VJ's been putting in work. You know, you're following people's Strava, you follow Instagram, you see all the traffic. I don't post a lot of my workouts. Not a lot of people know what I'm doing, what speeds I'm putting them in. But even if you are doing really strong workouts, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to translate to performance in a race, right? We've all seen that a million times. So, it was nerve-wracking. It was nerve-wracking. But once once we get started, you're in it. You just need to be focused, and you need to do your job. You're there for one thing, and you can't be intimidated by anybody else who's lined up next to you.
No, for sure. You obviously did a cracking job, and you got on the podium, which is amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, if we look at who else was there, like a lot of these guys, could have also been on. It was really anybody's game, right? So I think Kempson, right, was right up there. Josiah. VJ was right there. Like that group, kind of in the front. We were all relatively packed up until we hit the tire, and then it ended up, being who could flip the tire or who made the right decision.
That's Josiah's first race, I'm thinking, isn't it?
What's that?
That's Josiah's first race, isn't it?
Yeah. And you never know. Like, he could be a dark horse, and I think a lot of people had him, on the bracket, and he was running really well. He ran really well through the mud, through the start. So
I feel sorry for him on the obstacles.
He did amazing, especially I'm just looking at the results now. It's got his age down as 43. I'm not sure if he...
I think he'll turn 43 this year, I think is how it works. So, yeah.
He looks about 25. Two, hell, he can run for a 43-year-old. Damn. Wow, that's impressive. But
They're awesome. And Nick Riker, right? Nick Riker, he's an awesome athlete, right? He was in there. Of course, Mark Gaudet, those guys, any of them can put together a really good race. And sometimes you just end up with a little bad luck, or you get a tweak, or you're overcoming an injury or something. And, it just isn't your day. For me, it just happened to be my day, right? I was in the right place at the right time. I put in the work. You got to be able to put in the work to put yourself in contention to be there, but it also does take, it probably does take just a little bit of luck to end up on the podium for everything to go right. And I think for me, things fell into place this week.
So you alluded to it once. You said about if it's your first race, always go do another race first. Was that a reasoning for doing the cross Spartan cross, or was it because you were made to do it, or was it just because you thought it'd be a bit of fun? Did you go as hard as you wanted to go? All these questions.
I didn't go as hard as I wanted to go. I just went, I went, I wanted to try it. So a couple of weeks ago, I ran a trail race here in Ohio that is kind of my February race. Each year I run the same race just to see where I am compared to a previous year. Now there's always a bunch of snow and ice, which throws you off a little bit, but it was a 15K and I was 2 minutes faster than I was last year. So that was a really good leading indicator that, that what I've been doing up until this point is, is giving me an advantage, and that I'm going into this race stronger than I've been before. So having that boosted confidence, really helped me, know that I could go out there and execute, and I could dance with the big boys. So, so that was huge. And then on Friday, I thought it'd be fun to try this Spartan Cross concept. It's something that we, it's new to Spartan. They asked if we wanted to do it, and I kind of raised my head and said, hey, if you need somebody, I'd be happy to jump in. And so it was only six of us, right, who ended up doing this race. Mark Gaudet, myself, Dave Megita, we kind of went in with the plan like, all right, we're just going to go, we'll go semi-hard, but, let's try to kind of stay together a little bit and make it fun, make it interesting, and then maybe go all out in like the last lap or something. But what happened was at the very start of the race, you run 15 meters, 10 meters, and the first thing you hit is a Hercules hoist, right? And the sandbag weighs as much as me. So I'm sitting there, like, hoisting this bag. I'm seeing everybody else's bags going up twice as fast as mine. And I'm like, dang, man, I'm going to be catching up from the very start. And so your heart rate just jumps immediately. And this is going to be the case for Spartancross. So if you're thinking about Spartancross, think about like your heart rate being elevated from the start, and you're just at threshold, right, the entire time. And we were doing three laps. And so, so I get this bag up, and then we go do a whole bunch of obstacles. It's just over a kilometer. It's probably closer to 3/4 of a mile for each lap. And, and it was the same obstacles, some strength. We had the barbed wire crawl up that hill. We had monkey bars. We had the multi-rig, which included rings and a horizontal bar and some other things, rope climb, so all those different things. And so I figured, okay, I got to catch up to everybody. And then I got to put a little bit of a gap on them because they're going to catch me when we get back to the Hercules hoist or to the sled drag. But what happened was I ended up putting too much of a gap on them a little bit, and, and then was a little bit efficient, through the Hercules hoist and kind of kept like a steady pace. Like I wasn't going all out because I still had Sunday that I was really kind of preparing for, but I had fun out there. It was great. I think it's going to be a great product. I think people are really going to have a lot of fun with that. And I also think it's something where you will be able to double or triple up on a weekend, and it's not going to kill you. Right. If you do that on a Friday and then you race on a Sunday or even back to back days, it's kind of like the 3K course. Right. And like,
what was your time for that cross event?
You know what? My watch, I didn't stop my watch on that one. So I'm not quite
4 days, 28 hours.
Yeah, exactly. If you look at my Strava, I think I'm still running it. So I'll be done like tomorrow sometime, whenever the battery dies. But no, I'm not quite sure. I wish they had it up because I was looking on online and they don't have the Spartancross results because the only one that they timed was our race, right? The elite. The six guys and the six, girls who are running the elite wave. So they didn't put it up online, but I'm going to have to track somebody down and figure out what that time was. Because the fact that we did three laps also means we can compare each lap. And it would be really cool to see, hey, how fast was my first lap compared to my middle and last. That'd be really cool to see for anybody doing this type of workout.
And do you know with, because Joe Descent is obviously behind it and the standardization of sport and blah, 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 blah. Do you know or think it will be the same course? I know obviously it can't be the same elevation, what have you, but do you think it will be the same obstacles, same course at every venue, or are they going to mix up the obstacles and courses?
You know what? That's a great question. If you were to ask for my recommendation, because I have no idea what they're going to do with it, I haven't talked
to them about this,
but I'll try to do some recon for you. I'll try to figure it out. I'll talk to him in the background. But I think what would be cool is if you could, more easily compare your times from one event to the next. So doing standardized obstacles might be cool because, then how well you're doing across an entire season. But there's also something to the uncertainty and the variation, right, and being ready for absolutely anything that can be thrown at you. As long as the standardized obstacles are diverse enough that it's testing a number of different skill sets, I think that'd be a good thing. What I don't want to happen is it to be a multi-rig and monkey bars and, some other rig, and it just being all rigs and upper body, right? There has to be some strength. There has to be some some other things, maybe even incorporating some balance into it might be a good idea. Just getting all around kind of athletic performance. I think that would be ideal. I mean, the topography is always going to be different too, right? So it's not always going to be flat, dry conditions. So that's always going to throw you off a little bit.
Yeah. So Spartan have put out their minimal information about the cross event, but listeners, if you want to find out a little bit more about it, go watch the Spartan Games event. They did the Spartan Cross in the Games events as one of their miniature events. So you'll be able to see what Logan's talking about. Kind of a very short course, very intense, high intensity Spartan course. They have said that they're going to try and increase it as a product and have a lot more emphasis on there. I believe Dave Watson said that on another podcast that there was going to be a lot of money in there, prize money.
Right.
We hear that obviously said a lot, but It's interesting that they are coming with a very, very short course event. For myself, I'd think if they're going to go a bit more standardized with this one and keep the normal Spartan races mixed up, keep changing them, they could do that because they haven't got a standardized kind of course, and that alludes to more Olympic standard or something of a greater nature later on, which Joe is very keen on taking Spartan or OCR to the Olympics at some point. But it's great that you took part, Logan, and smoked everybody. So now you are the cross champion, I guess, or the winner of Jacksonville. Was it your elite wave? Was it they didn't do trophies for the elite wave? They just asked you guys to jump in and do it.
Okay. Yeah, no, it was just I guess it was just for bragging rights or for, you know, it was just for the fun of it, really. No podium, no medals, and there were no fans there, right? I mean, it's a pandemic, so it was really just us and a couple camera guys running around the course. But hey, if you're doing it for the right reasons, like, none of that stuff should really matter, right? You do it because you love it, you love to compete, you love being out there, you know, with the other athletes. And you love pushing yourself. And that's why I signed up. I was like, hey, I can fly down a day early and, you know, jump in, get an extra day of warm weather before I head back to Cleveland. And I thought it was a blast. I think it'll be a really cool product if they decide to make it a big thing. A lot of people have been asking for more obstacle intensive, like, short courses. Mm-hmm. And this is exactly what that would be. So, I mean, I think they're kind of answering that call. But for me, you know, maybe I'll look into doing more of these.
Have you done a stadium race, Logan?
I have, yes.
Was it similar to that? Like the feeling of, like, threshold, just complete balls to wall, dying all the way through?
That's a perfect comparison. That's a perfect comparison because it is, you know, it's short. You're at threshold the entire time, even more so than a sprint course. And obstacle proficiency is so important, right? I think the only difference is that in the stadium races, first of all, you're going to have more stairs, right? You're going to have a little bit more up and down. Maybe that'll be the case on a mountain course or something, right, with the Spartan Cross. But there's also more exercise-specific things. So we're not doing burpees. We're not doing ball slams. We're not doing weighted jump ropes. We're not doing anything like that. These are all obstacles, right, in the Spartan Cross event, at least what we did down in Jacksonville. But think of the same intensity, right? The same, you're gonna endure the same amount of pain that you do in the stadium race as you will in the Spartan Cross event. So if you do well in stadiums, this might be something to consider.
I do also think, like Luke said earlier, with Joe wanting to go down the whole standardization Olympics and just that, basically the viewers, how you see it and watch it. I think in a non-pandemic world where you've got 4,500, 5,000, I don't know how many people you get average at your Spartan races, but especially in National Series weekend, you're going to get a few thousand people there. If you had 10 of the best boys and girls racing Spartan Cross that's short, sharp, you can't make mistakes. Logan, you've got to be pretty shit hot on the rings. You've got to be pretty shit hot on the monkey bars. You can't make any silly mistakes because that's it, game done. You know, yes, okay, you might get back, but if everyone is as quick as VJ, you know, is as good as you on the obstacles, as, you know, Ryan, you know, you're going to be in trouble if you make a mistake. And I love that. I love the fact that, you know, you could be the fastest guy in the world, Mo Farah, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win, you know, a sprint course race, does it?
We've seen the excitement of the NORAM 3K, the OCR WC 3K. So we know this kind of short, intense race really works. And it's great. I know Spartan have tried a few with the time trial and a few other things in the past, but this might be the time that it sticks. But it'd be nice for people, because the open waves did one lap of the course, I believe.
One lap.
It's nice for people who maybe haven't got the distance in their legs to run the 5K. They just want to do some obstacles, beginners, people coming into obstacle course racing to jump in. Yeah, Spartan, just come and do a very short course. They know they're going to get it done in a certain amount of time. There's not a lot of running, so it's got two edges. I think it's got that really elite side that it could be epic to watch, but also a nice introductory, even more so than a sprint. I say sprint's pretty introductory.
Logan, in the US, do you feel like, because I feel like we have this in the UK a little bit, do you feel like people don't associate Spartan with an OCR race? Does that make sense? Do you, like, for instance, if I talk about OCR and NORAMs and all those 3K, 15K,
yeah,
you associate more rig type obstacles, obviously. Whereas with Spartan, you do get that balance, you get the strength, you get the terrain being a bit awkward. Now, I'm not saying you don't get that in other races. Of course, you get that in other races. But do you feel like this is Spartan trying to be a bit more OCR-y? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I think when people think of Spartan and OCR in the US, it's synonymous, right? I think they're one and the same, because the races that we have here are different than what you'll see in Europe, where there are more varied obstacles, more unique obstacles, more challenging obstacles, right, that you face in Europe, and a lot of races where you have more obstacles closer together. Here, all the different series, whether it's Savage or you know, Spartan, or what was Tough Mudder, now Spartan. You know, all these things were, you know, very, very similar, right? And there wasn't a whole lot of differentiation between them. So I think here we have a lot of ninja competition, which you guys may have, where it's no running and it's just obstacle after obstacle after obstacle.
That's a whole other sport.
But that's a whole other sport in itself. And we don't have that differentiation here the way that you guys do across the pond.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
For yourself, Ninja Warrior, how long have you been taking part in Ninja Warrior? It's been a few seasons now you've been appearing on the show.
Yeah.
So first of all, obviously you're going to go for it again this year.
Yeah.
How has being a Ninja Warrior helped you transfer into like longer course OCR or classic obstacle course racing, I'd say? Was it obviously the upper body kind and the obstacle proficiencies there? But what's from your side, has that really helped you?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, first, I've been a runner forever, right? Since grade school, you know, I've been running. And so that was kind of my big thing. Like, I loved running. A lot of people know that I'm a world champion boomerang thrower. I compete on the U.S. boomerang team, and I've won several world championships with my team. I'm second in the world, you know, right now as an individual. And so that's a total unique sport. And that's totally a different sport, different idea. But if you see any YouTube videos where I'm out there throwing boomerangs, you know that I have a whole nother life on top of this one and my day job. But then, you know, when it comes to, you know, so I was a runner, and then I started doing ninja competitions because I thought it would be fun to do Ninja Warrior. But what I found is that when you started to combine the two, so all the obstacle training I was doing for Ninja Warrior, rock climbing, going to specific, you know, ninja style gyms, that sort of thing, really made me perfectly adapted for OCR, especially with the running background that I had. So
I thought you were going to say, make you adapted for boomerang throwing. I was like, really?
No. Yeah. I mean, other than the grip strength, there's really no benefit to boomerang throwing at all. I mean, with boomerangs, it's like the less you move, the better, you know, the better you are, the less you move, right? So you just got to be good at throwing and catching. So it's a little bit different, but I think they should make boomerangs an obstacle in OCR. I think that would give me a huge advantage. I would be totally down for that if anybody has that idea. I'll have to talk to Joe DeSena about it. But no, Ninja Warrior, I've been doing that for – I did that before I got into OCR. I've only been doing OCR, you know, a few years. And I got into OCR because I did Ninja Warrior. And I thought, hey, like, I'm already a runner. I met some people here locally who are into the OCR scene. A lot of the same story as a lot of people who are out there running and doing these things, right? They get friends to talk them into it. And then they find out it's their thing. It's their jam. And I kind of ran away with it and love every second of it. So, so it's been really good. And I continue to train for Ninja Warrior. That's only once a year, right? The show itself. I don't do a lot of ninja competitions throughout the year. I kind of just focus on OCR. But it's just kind of a fun thing to do. And it's a good way to promote my sport and, you know, kind of hopefully inspire and motivate, you know, young people to follow their dreams.
No, definitely.
I tell you what, though, it's huge, with it being on TV. I was going to say, I've got my own training facility, Logan, and I've just put up like a ninja rig, and it started as like four bits of timber and a bit of cliffhanger. Now it's like four bits of timber, cliffhanger, some monkey bar, you know, and it's just growing and growing and growing. But I'm like 5 weeks in now of everyday training, and I've realized I now have to take a few days off because things aren't working anymore. Like, my shoulders are like, oh, yeah, that's sore. Fingers, yeah, they're gone. You know, like, so I'm like, how do these warriors, guys, how do they keep up just doing this 5 hours a day? Like, I'm finding myself going for runs to break from my ninja worrying because, like, my fingers are just screwed.
Oh, my gosh. You got to work, yeah, you got to work mobility on everything, right? Yeah. Shoulders, yeah. Like, even your fingers, like, every little thing. You want to be, you know, stretched out. You want to make sure you're warming up, cooling down, doing everything properly. But, man, you're right. I mean, the two disciplines kind of counteract one another. So I'm working on Ninja Warrior and putting on some strength and grip strength and that aerobic, you know, capacity and endurance, while also working on running and doing, you know, being a fast runner and being able to run long distances, which is going to be counterproductive to the strength that I'm trying to put on. So, yeah. You know, so it's all about being balanced. I think once, you know, if you just focused on, you know, being able to complete obstacles efficiently, right? Yeah. Not necessarily being the strongest or being, you know, being able to dead hang, you know, longer than anybody else. That's not what it's about. It's about being able to get through obstacles efficiently, being able to get through carries efficiently, practicing that discipline. You get up to a point where you're strong enough that you're gonna accomplish anything, any obstacle, any rig, any low rig. That they throw at you in these competitions. And that's where you need to be, right? You get there, you get to the point that even when you're tired, you can get through any of those. Then you just focus on running. You focus on speed. You focus on footwork. You focus on trails. You focus on elevation. And that's going to be your recipe for success in OCR, right? You only need to be strong enough to complete all these obstacles efficiently and quickly. But at the end of the day, it becomes a cross-country race in between that.
Yeah, but let's be fair. Some of the Ninja Warrior videos look cool for Instagram, though, right?
Oh man, they look awesome.
Even though they're pointless, Like,
no,
pointless,
man,
they look amazing.
If you can do a 20-foot lache, I think that's awesome. You know, and it looks really cool. But I don't know that it's going to help you too much in the OCR scene. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I could be wrong. But
it's actually Luke's fault. Luke got me watching. What's his name? Luke on Instagram that you sent me.
John Brown.
And that, yes. I was like, oh my god, I want to be able to do that. The guy is a machine. He's a monkey. I actually do think he's a monkey.
Oh, he's incredible. No, he's incredible.
Wingspan and it's just his ability to hold his weight on one arm. Anyway, we digress.
Sorry, we're going another direction. But yeah, I think but if you guys are out there, you know, anybody who's training, mix in a little bit of rock climbing, mix in that grip work. Like, you want to trick your body, so you want to try a lot of different things. I do a lot of different things to train, you know, just to keep the variation, right, involved. And then incorporating running in between different things. Like, just the same thing that you put yourself through in an OCR race. That's what's going to get you there.
Sure. From this race this weekend, Logan, do you think, could you tell people have been on COVID holiday, if you like? Could you tell people a lot quicker because they've obviously had more time to run and spend time at home running? You tell people were like, obviously, well, the title says it all. People haven't been doing their deadlifts and squats and things like that. They haven't been to the gym. I can't wait in England to see who's affected by what. I mean, yes. Like I say, I'm fairly lucky that I own my own training facility, so my training really hasn't changed. You know, whereas Luke, for instance, you know, his gym has obviously completely shut. He lives in a flat. You know, there's no chance of real much, what I call quality days. He's only going to be able to run, so he's running like a beast right now. But that makes a difference if he can't hang with his own body weight.
I still do that.
It's interesting. Do you think it's affected?
From what I'm seeing is that, you know, of the elites, right, of the top guys, you know, there's very few who haven't been putting in work, even through the COVID, through the winter, through the dark, cold days. You know, a lot of them have still been doing enough to be very competitive. I don't think if somebody hasn't been working, you're going to know it immediately, right? Because you'd normally see them in the top five, top 10, and they're down in, you know, the 20, 30 spots, which are fine, which is great, but not where you expect them to be. I didn't see that a lot in this race, right? I saw a lot of the top guys who, you know, maybe missed a spear or maybe, you know, weren't quite as quick as they normally are late in the season, right? But that's just because it's still early, right? This isn't necessarily the time where we need to peak, right? You shouldn't be optimized for a February race when Abu Dhabi is in December.
Yeah, December. I was going to say that.
Yeah, right. Let's keep that in perspective, right? Let's keep that in mind. But but there are going to be folks who, you know, who are trying to scramble to get ready for a race. That's where injuries can happen. That's where, you know, overtraining, you know, might happen before a race, and you might get burned out before you even get to the start line. So don't let that be you. You know, be out there, you know, putting in the work, be deliberate about the training that you do. And don't try to make up for days that you missed necessarily. Pick up your training where you left off, be smart, and make sure you're varying the type of work that you're doing. But no, this weekend, I didn't see a lot of guys who showed up who were very obviously, you know, like have just sat on the couch, right, for 6 months or for 12 months in our case, right? Yeah. Everybody's been out there doing work.
No, definitely. That's cool. And the new thing now, obviously, you are part of the Elite Obstacle Racing Collab team.
Yes.
Has that helped training, having those other people to chat to kind of hit ideas off? I know, obviously, Rich Ryan is part of there. He's a coach. He's very well-respected and does things. And there's a few other great athletes that race this weekend that you've mentioned. Yeah. How's it been on that team?
Oh my gosh. You know, that team is, I didn't realize how big a difference it would make. Right. So I have the Cleveland Obstacle Racing Alliance here in Cleveland. That's the local group that, you know, kind of got me into OCR, and, you know, good friends. We like to mix it up together. You know, this group is all over the country, right? Men and women. It's called the Obstacle Racing Collaborative. And anybody can find it on Instagram. You can see what we're up to. But what's cool about this is it's a place where we share training tips, thoughts, ideas. We talk a lot about the mentality of the sport, right? So we talk as much about the physical game as we do the mental game, and we strategize, right? We strategize on you know, what we have coming up. We bounce ideas off of each other. And we hold each other accountable, which I think is one thing that during COVID, maybe a lot of people don't have, because you can't train with your friends all the time, right? You can't go to gyms, and a lot of people can't do that, you know, given their geography and where they are. So it's been incredible. I'm glad Rich, you know, pulled us together. We're kind of keeping it small for now, you know, making sure that everybody gets what they need to out of it. We're still trying to, you know, kind of figure out what this whole thing is going to become. But for now, it's been hugely valuable. Even the fact that I was running with Mark Gaudet during the race, and the fact that I had a brother in, you know, in Torque, right, is what we call it, the Obstacle Racing Collaborative, racing there with me was even more motivating and inspiring, because we've been talking for, you know, once every couple of weeks for the past, you know, couple months. And, you know, and we want each other to do well. So we want to encourage each other. Not that I don't do that with every athlete. I do. Everybody I pass, I give some encouragement to, or if they're passing me. But there's something about, you know, having that bond and really pulling each other through that was huge this weekend. So I'm really thankful for those guys. And I think it's going to be something special. And hopefully we can share some thoughts and ideas with everybody else that can up their game.
And like you say, it works on the flip side as well. For instance, you didn't have a bad weekend this week, but say, for instance, Mark was feeling a bit like, ah, shit, do you know what I mean? You guys can then afterwards talk about it and say, look, Mark, you're only a feet away. You know, you were only a few seconds. It was only this mistake, or you can get better at this, or improve here, or, you know, look, mate, it's not that bad. So there's that side of things as well, isn't there, you know? Which we all need, because let's be fair, as professional athletes, as, you know, Spartan Pro, me and Lucas, Spartan Pros as well, you do always tend to over-analyze your own mistakes and problems as well. Like, you're like, ah, just not good enough and this and that. And actually, you can get yourself more down doing that sometimes, I feel. And actually, just, you know, race happy, race free. And they're some of the best races you sometimes. And the ones I've won have always been the ones where I've just actually gone with no expectation whatsoever, you know, and it is just fun.
Totally. I mean, sometimes you go into a race with low expectations and you take the pressure off of yourself, and then you race incredibly well. Sometimes you walk in and you're like, I gotta perform here, I gotta execute, everybody's expecting me to execute well, they've got me in there on their podium list or whatever, and you know, and then you implode. And so the fact of the matter is, you need to be mentally strong enough to know, hey, what are your capabilities? What is your strategy? And you need to execute to that strategy. You need to run your race, not everybody else's race. And you have to walk in with a game plan. And you have to forgive yourself for having a bad day, right? Everybody, mm-hmm. if you race enough in a year, one of those races isn't going to go according to plan, right? And you may struggle a little bit. It doesn't mean that you're not in condition. It doesn't mean that you're not up for the challenge. It just means you had a bad day. And you got to bounce back, get back on the horse, and get back to training, get back to, you know, get that confidence back. Because I guarantee if you're racing with no confidence, you're not going to do as well as you can possibly do. I know, like, my Torque teammate, Nick Riker, has been killing it this year, right? He could have been on the podium this week. He had trouble with the tire, you know, and he should know that he's going to be awesome this year, guys. So if you, if you guys are putting out like feelers on like who's been putting in work and who you expect to do well, keep Nick on top of your list because, he's going to make some big moves this year. But I don't think he's going to come out of this race being super discouraged. He has all of us to kind of lift him up. He finished like 11th, which is awesome. But I know he was shooting for the podium too.
Wow. Cracking job. But you're right, though, with obstacle course racing, there are so many variables with all these obstacles. The spear, especially in Spartan, makes a huge difference to a race. You could be your form could be on top. You could be putting down great running times. You could have your VO2 could be off the charts. You're like, I'm fit, I'm ready, I'm strong. But one obstacle can take it out of you, unlike running, where if you are really fit and you're on your game, really, you can run a good race. Cycling, triathlon, there's a few variables, but when you come to obstacle course racing, what, there's 20 obstacles in a sprint? That's 20 variables, plus right. the running, plus something else. It's just so many different things. But amazing that you put all those together and managed to hit the podium this weekend. What's on the horizon for Logan then? What's the next race you're going to go to? What's the season like for you?
Yeah, good question. So this year, I'm going to focus on the U.S. National Series, right? I'm going to focus on executing, the best, three, four, however many races I need to put in, right, to end mm-hmm. up on a USNS podium, by the end of the year. Again, I'm more of a mountains guy, even though I don't live in high elevation. I don't have, like, huge mountains to train on, but I'm just designed – very well to run in the mountains. And so I would love to do OCR Worlds in Stratton Mountain. I finished mm-hmm. fourth at the past two NORAMs in that same venue. So mm-hmm. that's somewhere where I can find a podium at the World Championships this year. I ran very well in London, last year up until we got to the Skitch, and I ended up losing my dexterity and got passed by a couple guys there at the end. But I'm going to probably do OCR Worlds. I'm probably going to do more of the U.S. National Series, wrapping up eventually in Abu Dhabi, at the end of the year. And then I'll find some other ones, in between to jump in on because I still need to do more ultras, right? I think I think the longer the races, the better I tend to do. And mm-hmm. I might jump in on some real long races this year too. So still deciding what that looks like, but but I'll keep you guys posted.
I would say you're pretty good at the short stuff as well, though, Logan. I would write up the short stuff.
not bad at the sprints, mate.
Yeah, all right.
It was all right. I'll take it. But no, I'm looking forward to this year. It's going to be great. I mean, I'll be much more deliberate about training. I mean, a lot of people know me as like the boomerang guy, or the ninja guy, or this and that. They think maybe I'm too spread out, which probably is true. But this year OCR is going to be, a big focus of mine. And I'm looking forward to seeing everybody out on the course and to hanging out with old friends and hopefully we can all do it safely and we can all continue to motivate each other.
Nice.
I want to see your next Instagram video, a boomer off the podium, please, Logan.
Oh, that's great. Oh my gosh, that's a brilliant idea. Why haven't I done that?
Just not
it doesn't matter if it doesn't come back. Yeah, just don't do it with
the right. Well, I think Vegas is next weekend or next month. So Las Vegas, maybe later this month. I might pop out there if I find a affordable flight and go.
I reckon it's possible.
Oh yeah, I can make that into a boomerang.
You get a boomerang shaped one.
Yeah.
There you go. Spartan could sell them. See? So, Logan, where can the listeners follow you? Where can they follow this journey of yours? Is it Instagram, Facebook? Is there a website? What is it?
Yeah, so best place to follow me is just on Instagram at logan.broadbent. So check it out there. Also follow the Obstacle Racing Collaborative. Check out what we're up to. If you follow my Instagram, I'll have my website back up and running here soon. So if you want to learn more about boomerangs and what's going on, I have a YouTube channel, Logan Broadbent, you know, YouTube.com/Logan Broadbent. You can see some fun boomerang videos there too. But OCR, it's going to be a great year. And, I appreciate everybody's support. And, if you have tips or if you need recommendations, training tips, anything you need, please just shoot me a direct message and I'd be happy to help anybody out who, is just getting into the sport, who is, you know, looking for podiums or looking to become elite. Happy to share some ideas with anybody who wants to reach out.
You realize you're going to get a shitload of DMs about boomerang throwing.
Yes, yes. I'll have boomerangs available for sale on my website soon.
Mainly for me.
Yeah, I know. Jack is like, hey, I listened to this podcast and you said something about boomerangs. Can I get
one? I've already done it. I've already messaged it.
Logan, thank you very much for joining us today. Congratulations on your podium and crushing the Spartan Cross event. We're sure to see you more at those events. And good luck with the rest of your season. We wish you the best and hopefully you get more success throughout the year.
Really appreciate you guys. Thank you for having me on. And thanks for all the listeners. I really appreciate everyone's support. We'll see you guys at the next one.
Hopefully in person at Abu Dhabi.
Yes, maybe. Let's go. Man, I got my fingers crossed. That would be awesome. Just be safe out there for sure.
Cheers, Logan.
See you guys.